Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Sylvester, and today we've got guest Mick Chiarella on from Fantrax, and we're going to be talking about waiver wire pickups, answering questions from the listener mailbag. But first, we're going to jump into news from over the past weekend. Mick, how's it going?
Good, Bobby. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We've got plenty to talk about today, and we're only, 1/15 of the way through the baseball season, but this is the time of the year where if you're making waiver wire pickups, you can really win your league by picking up, this year's version of Aaron Judge, if there is such a thing, or one of these guys that's going to break out all of a sudden.
Absolutely. It's never too early to scour the waiver wire, that's for sure.
All right, let's get into the news here in just a second. But first, today's show is sponsored by PristineAuction.com. I've told you guys about this quite a bit. And there's something for every sports fan because they auction off hundreds of items every single day. Just yesterday, I saw a Stan Musial signed baseball. Went for just $63. I really wanted to get this bad boy. Just missed out on it. Probably should have gotten a little bit higher because I would have loved it from my Cardinals collection. I also saw a signed Johnny Bench and Joe Morgan Reds batting helmet. Went for $66. Guys, there are incredible values on Pristine Auction. You just have to check it out. PristineE. And everything is guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. All right, so over the weekend, there wasn't a ton of news. Julio Urias was sent to the bullpen because they're making room for Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill's going to be back soon as well. I've had a lot of people ask me, what do we do with Urias? Because eventually these Dodgers guys are all going to get sent down to the 10-day DL. Is he going to be bumped back up into the rotation, or is this about it for him this year?
I think he's going to make some moves in the future this season. He's definitely going to be back in the rotation at some point. The thing is, it's going to be hard in the interim because it's not like he's going to be in the mix for saves with Kenley Jansen there. And he also did not pitch a lot of innings throughout his career. He only pitched 54 innings in 2017, only threw a handful, I think less than 20 innings in 2018. So they're going to build him back up. But I do think he's going to have some value at some point. It's just going to be a question of whether you can afford the stash in the meantime.
At this point, I'm not sure that he's as quality as Diego Castillo, who's sitting out there in probably, 85-90% of leagues. That's what you're hoping for with him. Otherwise, it's just, is he going to get back to the rotation? So let me ask you this. Over under 90 innings pitched for Urias the rest of the year?
I want to say over, but I think it's going to be slightly under. I think you're looking at it in the 70 to 80 range.
Me too. So I would drop him once he moves to the bullpen. He's got some value, but there's just an opportunity cost. There's better players out there. One of them, Ryan Brazier. I was laughing at myself because I said, Ryan Brazier is going to be the closer in Boston. You got to draft him everywhere. And then last show I was saying, well, he's not the closer. We can go ahead and drop him. Looks like he's the closer. He's got two saves since then.
I know. It's interesting. He and Barnes have both been great, but you'd have to be concerned if you own Barnes simply because they're just using him in more of the high leverage situations. I think both the last his appearances coming in the seventh inning with Brazier closing it out. So, yeah, I would be definitely on the Brazier train at this point.
I'm not sure I would necessarily drop Matt Barnes yet just in case something changes because, early in the season, team's trying to figure out what exactly they want to do. And maybe we should have been more patient with Brazier. But as for now, it seems as though Brazier is their closer moving forward. Someone that I thought was going to be, have a chance at some saves, especially with Jordan Hicks struggling, was Alex Reyes. But he was bad. They sent him back down to the minors to work on his command and just his mechanics. I'm not sure if when he comes back up, he'll be in the rotation. So is he someone you still want to hang on to, Mick?
I think I would let Reyes go at this point. It hurts me to say that because he's such great potential. But the control is just, as you said, it's really bad right now. He's got to work on some mechanics and fundamentals. The other thing I read is that when they send him down, they're not necessarily going to stretch him out, which means that even when he comes back later in the season, it's probably still going to be as a reliever. And again, with Hicks in the mix and even Carlos Martinez to some extent, I don't think the save opportunities are going to be there. So you're looking at more of like a middle reliever, and that's not something I'm going to want to wait on.
Yeah, Carlos Martinez is a good name. In fact, in a lot of leagues, he's already been cut because people are just tired of waiting for him, think that when he comes back, he's not going to be in the rotation. But whatever he is, I think he's going to be worth owning. So you might want to check your waiver wire to see if he's available. Would you rather pick him up than someone like Ryan Brazier?
I'd rather have Brazier at this point, and to be honest, I'd rather have Barnes also, because as you said, it's still kind of a fluid situation. I wouldn't necessarily think that Brazier is going to get all of the save opportunities at this point. I think they're both going to be in the mix. So I think I'd rather own both Boston relievers at this point than either Martinez or Reyes.
I think I'd rather own Brazier, but probably not Barnes, just because there's a chance Martinez does get back in that rotation. We'll see what happens with Waka, who walked eight guys last appearance, and then Adam Wainwright, who, you know, he was very good in his previous appearance, 9 Ks, I believe one run through 6 innings. I don't think we're going to expect that the rest of the season, though, so I think he does end up in the bullpen, and maybe Martinez gets the job. Maybe it's Reyes, maybe it's John Gant. They've got a lot of options there, but just in case Martinez gets back in the rotation, he's a top 25 starting pitcher again, I think he's worth hanging on to if you've got him.
I agree with that wholeheartedly.
All right, Miguel Sano is to begin his rehab assignment here, and it, you know, seems like it's going by really quick. We were thinking maybe early May, and that may still be the timeline, but this is somebody who, you look at Rhys Hoskins drafting the top 45 picks, Miguel Sano, over the course of his career, per game, has been every bit as good as Rhys Hoskins in terms of batting average and power. The difference is the lineup that they're in. Obviously, the Phillies are scoring a ton of runs, but Sano needs to be owned everywhere. Is now the time to start picking him up, or are you waiting another week?
I personally am going to wait a little bit. I'm a little less bullish on Sano. I kind of compare him. He's a better version of Mark Trumbo to me, or Kendrys Morales, who are two guys that you're not exactly excited to own. Sano is better than those guys, and it helps that he plays third base. But for example, if you own somebody like Yandy Diaz, who's been off to a hot start, batting leadoff for Tampa Bay once again today, I'm not really getting rid of those kind of players for Sano. Obviously, you know, if you have him, you keep him on the bench for the next few weeks, and he is worth a pickup in the short term. I'm just not as bullish as sounds like you might be, Bobby.
No, that's fair. Yeah, I totally understand that. Last year he was putrid, 199 batting average, 13 homers in just 71 games, with that said. But his career 162-game pace is 36 homers, 100 RBIs, 244 batting average, which is right behind Rhys Hoskins. And like I said, Hoskins is at like 37 homers for his career pace. So I don't know. Miguel Sano was a former top prospect. He's still young. He just turned 20. He's almost 26 years old. I think that he's got more in the tank. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 25 homers the rest of the season. But to each his own, I definitely understand being skeptical about him. No doubt about it.
He's definitely going to have a bright future. It's just a question of, in, you know, redraft formats, how you want to proceed. But obviously, he's still young enough to make a splash.
All right, last piece of news I want to talk about is Ryan McMahon. We recorded on Thursday about he was such a great pickup. Everyone's panicking. He's not playing well. Well, guys, he hasn't played in Coors. Of course he's not playing well. Pick him up. And now he's on the IL with an elbow strain. So, do you hang on to him through this? Because we only have so many IL spots. We were talking about it last show. Most leagues only have one or two. You should probably have five, I think. But, you know, Ryan McMahon, you might not have a spot for him on the IL. So do you hang on to him, Mick?
Well, and that's the thing. And it depends on your options. You know, we just talked about Miguel Sano. And he's somebody who has the upside that it's probably worth stashing. With McMahon, it's a little less clear. You know, he has struggled thus far early on in his career, and as you mentioned, this season, which he hasn't played in Coors yet. But over the course of his career, he only has, you know, 5 home runs and I think 1 or 2 steals and a little over 200 career at-bats. So it's not as if we're talking about an elite player. Obviously, he's still young and has some upside. But with the Rockies, there's so many other players in the mix. You have Garrett Hampson there. You have their love affair, their seemingly never-ending love affair with Mark Reynolds and players of that nature. So even when McMahon comes back, you know, obviously Daniel Murphy's going to be back in another month or two. I don't know if McMahon is going to get the consistent play time to warrant a stash at this point.
You know, I'm really optimistic about McMahon, but at this point, I don't even know how long this injury is going to be. If you've already got 2 or 3 guys injured and you have a smaller bench, I think you got to cut them loose. I mean, if he's playing in Coors, he could be Corey Dickerson, which is a nice player, especially at second base, but that's like best case scenario probably as a rookie. So I think he still qualifies a rookie. Maybe he's a sophomore this season. So yeah, I would probably cut ties with McMahon as much as it sucks, just like it did with Trevor May when he didn't win the closer job. And he's basically out of that closer committee at this point, which is a bummer. So yeah, go ahead and let those guys loose. And we have a lot of people to talk about today who I think are worth picking up.
Absolutely. There's a ton of hitters and players on the waiver wire to get after this week.
So on Fantasy Pros, we've got these tools for you. One of them is called My Playbook. I'm not sure if you guys have ever used that. You can upload one team for free just to see what it's like. You've got the lineup assistant, waiver assistant, trade finder, daily projections, all kinds of stuff. But if you want to upgrade and get some really cool options, Like, say you're going on vacation or you just, you know, are eating dinner with your parents when lineups lock in and you don't want to miss out on that guy who's a late scratch. We've got something called the autopilot where you can auto swap bench players for guys that aren't actually playing. You can put them into your lineup and my playbook does it for you. And you can also manage up to 10 teams all at once because I hate going like three different websites. It just feels like homework every single day. You can manage all your teams from my playbook if you upload to our premium packages. We've got the MVP package, which is less than $5 a month if you get a 1-year package.
Excellent. Yeah, I have my playbook on one of my teams. It's a very helpful tool, no doubt.
Data, baby. I love it, Mick. All right, so we're getting into the waiver wire here, and the way that we're doing it this year, at least for the time being, is we're going to go from different ranges, 40 to 60% owned for those more shallow leagues, 8, maybe 10-team leagues, 20 to 40% ownership for the standard 12-team size league, and then 0 to 20% for, you know, deeper leagues, 14, 16 teams, AL-only, NL-only leagues. So let's start with just hitters, 40 to 60%. Is there a player in this range that you're fond of, Mick?
There's quite a few, actually. First on my list, we're just talking about a twin player in Miguel Sano. I'm going to mention Max Kepler here. Kepler has been leading off for the Twins, mostly in a platoon role against right-handers, but for the most part, they're going to face a lot of right-handers, especially in that division. He's been leading off. He made a lot of strides last year. He has an elite walk rate. I think he walked over 11% of the time in last season's at-bats. Fairly good contact rate, struck out less than 17% of the time. And like I said, he's leading off this season. This particular week, the Twins only have 5 games, so people might shy away from jumping on board. But after that, the schedule gets real nice. I kind of look at him as a little bit of a George Springer light, a guy that can, you know, if he hits at the top of the lineup, can get 80, 90 runs, maybe 20, 25 home runs. Handful of steals and a pretty decent average, you know, 260, 270. So he's somebody I'm really targeting.
He scored 80 runs last year while batting 224. So he's got some upside to score runs. That's a good Twins lineup. And the 224 was fluky. You look at his batted ball data. He was more likely a 240, 245 batter last year. And he just turned 26, so he's got a lot of potential. And also keep in mind, he just started playing baseball 10 years ago when he was 16 years old. This is someone with a lot of potential, and he's already got a pretty mature approach at the plate. I agree. I think he's got potential to be a guy who hits 25 homers, 90 runs, 260, 265 batting average, maybe even 10 steals. So, yeah, he's a very quality pickup at this stage. And he's owned in about 55% of leagues, so you might not be able to get him if you're in one of these deeper leagues. But if he's out there, he's a very quality pickup. I'd drop Jose Martinez for him, who's not getting any playing time, by all means.
Absolutely.
The one guy I really like in this range, and, you know, frankly, I do like Max Kepler a little bit better, but somebody that you should keep your eye on that a lot of people have kind of given up on, Hunter Renfroe, because he's in that outfield, that crowded outfield with Manny Margot, Will Myers, who's injury prone, Franmil Reyes, and Franmil Reyes is the fan favorite, right? He's got all this power. Well, yeah, he has all this power, but Hunter Renfroe might even have more. If you look at what he's done throughout his career, he always absolutely mashes. He's on a terror right now. He's batting 364 with a 1400 OPS and a couple home runs. If he keeps playing like this, he's going to play every single day. And this is someone that if he's playing every day, he should be owned in 80% of leagues.
I am all about Hunter Renfroe, my friend. I have him in my NFBC online league, and I've been benching him much to my chagrin so far because he's not gotten the playing time, but he has started 4 of the last 5 days, as you mentioned. Reyes has been taking a little bit of a back seat, which is warranted at this point because Renfroe has vastly outproduced them. So yeah, if Renfroe gets, I'd say, even 5-6 starts a week, he's gonna, you know, hit 30 home runs in that lineup, hitting behind Machado and a very, you know, Hosmer, and a very potent lineup that's in San Diego.
I love hearing you say that you love him because everybody I've talked to has been like, ah, Hunter Renfroe. They've got Franmil Reyes. Why would we own Hunter Renfroe? But Hunter Renfroe throughout his career, this, remember, he plays in San Diego, one of the biggest pitcher's parks. Per 162 games, he averages 37 home runs, guys. He's got an 807 career OPS, and he hasn't even hit his prime yet. Why are we giving up on this guy?
I don't know. It's baffling to me. And like I said, I think it's the playing time issue, the playing time concerns. But, you know, as you mentioned, it's not as if the Padres are filled with beacons of health in the outfield. I'm sure we'll see Myers in the IL at some point. And if Reyes continues to struggle, Renfroe should be in for a large number of at-bats.
Sure. Yeah, a couple other guys in this range. I already mentioned Jay Bruce on last week's show. He was dealing with plantar fasciitis last year, which is extraordinarily painful, let me tell you. It is awful. I can't even imagine like standing up to cook or do the dishes with that, let alone playing baseball. So he's back. He's healthy. He always hits 30 homers. In fact, 36 just 2 years ago with over 100 RBIs. Randall Grichuk's available. He's a good source for power. Batting average not so great, but, you know, kind of like Hunter Renfroe. When you were talking about the Twins and Max Kepler, I thought you were going to say either Jorge Polanco or CJ Cron. I hadn't realized Kepler was available in that many leagues, but all these Twins are good pickups.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention Polanco as well. You know, if you're looking for a middle infielder, Polanco is a player who's talented. He does a little bit of everything. He'll get you 10, 15 homers, 10, 15 steals. We saw him hit for the cycle the other night, which probably put some antennas up on the in the fantasy community. But yeah, he's a guy who can get do a little bit of everything. I like, and he's hitting in the top of that lineup as well. I really like what he can do.
You know, Mick, Colton Wong is now owned in 70% of leagues. And for Wong, I think we are hoping he becomes Jorge Polanco. I think Polanco is a superior player.
I agree. I really like Polanco a lot.
Is there anybody else in this range that you think is worthy of a pickup or at least consideration?
I had Renfroe written down. I had Grichuk written down. I had Polanco written down. So I think we've covered most of the players that I'm targeting in this range.
I'm not very excited about a couple of the names on this list. Zunino, I guess if you need a catcher. I'm not excited about any catcher, let's be honest.
I actually kind of like the players on the second list a little bit better, you know, as far as value.
Yeah, 20 to 40% range. There's quite a few of them. So why don't you start us off here with a couple names you like? Don't take my guy because I'm really excited about this one.
Well, I did mention Yandy Diaz a little bit earlier, so I'll start with him. Playing a little bit of first, a little bit of third, hitting at the top of the Tampa Bay lineup. And, you know, I really like what he can do. He hits for a power, hits for a pretty good average. I'm not sure how sustainable the average has been to this point. But the power is legitimate, and I think he has a chance to stick at the top of that lineup for the considerable future.
You know, everybody I've been talking to in the expert community loves Yandy Diaz. He's never really had that much power in the minor leagues before, but he's been a consistent batting average guy. The reason he hasn't had the power isn't because he's not a powerful guy. It's because of his launch angles. Now that he's, you know, becoming part of this, you know, Ray system where they're trying to hit the ball in the air more, we're going to see a guy who could bat 290 with 15, 20 home runs. That's a quality fantasy baseball player, especially if he's batting at the top of that lineup every day.
Absolutely.
The name I wrote down here is Dansby Swanson. And it kind of, you know, when I first came up with this, it made me want to puke because I was like, I cannot possibly in good conscience recommend anybody pick up Dansby Swanson. At first, I was just like, you know, the reason why is he's playing three games in Coors this week, and he plays seven games this week every single day. So if you need another radar streamer, yeah, Swanson's a guy. He's 13% owned or whatever, and that's been climbing up because he's been playing well. But it's not just on paper he's been playing well. And I get it. It's a smaller sample size. He's just 25 years old, and he's a former top prospect with lofty offensive expectations set for him. I don't know if he'll ever get there. But the StatCast data is so much better than this time last year. His walk rate has doubled. K rate is down to 17.4%, which is quite good. His barrel rate is way up as well. Everything about Dansby Swanson right now in his underlying metrics suggests this might be a breakout that we were all expecting 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's funny because I sort of had a similar take. You know, I wrote him down and then I said, do I really want to write and talk about Dansby Swanson? But I do, you know, because like you said, this has the makings of a breakout. He does have that, you know, post-hype sleeper-type feel. And he is heading towards the bottom of the lineup, which is to be expected. But that's a very good lineup. And as you mentioned, he plays in Coors this week. He's got seven games. So I would fire him up this week for sure.
Yeah, he's going to steal some bags as well. Maybe not this week, but in the future. So he's the kind of guy that I'm not going to pick him up expecting him to win my season, but there's a chance that he does become that breakout guy that everyone's like, how did I miss on him? Former top prospect, all these tools in a great lineup where he's going to score runs and drive in RBIs. I just think that he's the kind of guy you pick up right now. You wait and see what you have. And if it's not good, so what? You drop him after a week where he had some good matchups.
Right. And especially, you know, if you drafted Trey Turner early, you might have either not taken a backup shortstop or you have a, you know, bottom feeding type player. Swanson's a pretty ideal pickup for people in those circumstances.
Bingo, that's a really good point. All right, so I already talked about Miguel Sano. Last week's show, I talked about Christian Walker. Just to highlight that really quick, I'm a big fan of him now that Jake Lamb's out. This is somebody who has always mashed in the minor leagues. 305 batting average, 185 RBIs, 92 home runs in AAA in just 217 games. He destroys lefties, hits righties as well. I think he's this season's version of Jesus Aguilar, perhaps, and I want to pick him up in every single league. I like him more than either of the guys we've mentioned so far. Maybe not more than Miguel Sano, but that's only because you can IL Sano in most leagues.
I think that's a very good point about this season's Aguilar, because I'm not convinced that even when Lamb returns that he's going to supplant Walker at this point. You know, if Walker has a big month, we've seen Lamb struggles against left-handed pitchers. So even if in a worst-case scenario, I think you're looking at a platoon split, but you know, I'm not convinced that Lamb is going to be better than Walker even once he returns.
Yeah, so who else do you have in this range? You mentioned there's quite a few that you like a lot.
I love Jeff McNeil on the Mets. He hits for a high average, which is, you know, it's hard to come by, you know, this far down on the waiver wire. And the thing I like about him, other than hitting in the top of the lineup and hitting for average, is the multi-positional eligibility. Right now, I think he's currently only eligible at second, depending on your league format. But he's already played, I believe it's 5 or 6 games at third and 5 or 6 games in left this season. So he's somebody who's going to be gaining some eligibility at corner and at outfield in the near future. And I really like his bat. We've seen Brandon Nimmo struggle to get off to a good start this season. So I think McNeil is pretty safe at the top of that lineup for the future.
Could he be the next, you know, Daniel Murphy type that just breaks out all of a sudden, because he's just a quality hitter that never got much attention because he doesn't really do anything else, but hitting is so much of the game in fantasy.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, he doesn't have a ton of power or a ton of speed, but yeah, he's exactly the kind of player that can get you 90 runs and a 300 batting average and by default sort of get you, you know, 60, 70 RBIs and 10 or 15 homers, which is definitely has value.
Sure. Yeah, that absolutely helps out. So who else do you have in this range that you like?
Well, I'd be remiss if I did not mention Williams Astudillo.
There you go.
Another twin. All he does is rake. He's so fun to watch. He doesn't walk. He doesn't strike out. All he does is hit. And, you know, for catchers, especially if you're in a two-catcher league, and a lot of times when you're in a two-catcher league, your second option is somebody who barely plays anyway, plays maybe 3-4 times a week, hits at the bottom of the lineup. Astudillo is for real. He can hit, and you know, he doesn't have a full-time role per se net yet, but he's definitely somebody who, when he's in the lineup, he's gonna mash.
Yeah, I think that's the case as well. And you know, if he continues to hit like he has throughout his career, right now he's got what, a 370 career batting average? It's the best in baseball history. He's gonna get in the lineup more.
4 career homers and 3 career strikeouts. It's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. Okay, so before we move on to the next range, any other players you want to mention?
No, I don't believe so. I had Dansby, I had Walker, I had a couple of guys you mentioned. So yeah, there's a lot of guys I like in this range.
All right, I'll start us off with the next group, and I'm going with Lewis Brinson. He's only 4% owned, and he's just someone that I kind of forgot about until this spring when he started mashing. He's someone that we formerly said could be a, you know, a 30-20 type of hitter. He was a top 20 prospect at one point. And like, you know, Ryan McMahon and Dansby Swanson, who we've mentioned, you know, it's just kind of this post-hype type of thing where you forget about him. Last season, he batted 199 with a 577 OPS. This year, he started off really rough. Or you would think he's actually crushing the ball. First of all, he crushed the ball in spring training, 5 homers, 896 OPS. But you look at his batted ball metrics, and he's been one of the most, if not the most, unlucky hitter in baseball this year. His batted ball metrics actually suggest his WOBA should be around 394. That's Aaron Judge, Paul Goldschmidt range. His real WOBA is 282. That's like JT Riddle, Devin Travis range, right? So granted, he's not going to be Aaron Judge or Paul Goldschmidt, but what I'm saying is he's crushing the ball, and he's a former top prospect. He's going to be playing every day in Miami, and I think you can get him for cheap before he breaks out, and I think he's going to have a good season.
I agree. And like you said, the post-hype breakout, also a little bit under the radar in Miami, but you know, as you mentioned, the batted ball data suggests that he is on the right track, and he can really put up some good numbers in the next few weeks.
All right, who do you like from this range?
Well, I mentioned in the piece that we did for last week, the waiver wires, I mentioned Ryan Zimmerman. He's another guy. I love his batted ball profile. Hits a lot of hard contact. Hits in a very good lineup. He's hitting behind Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon, and all those two guys do is get on base. So Zimmerman will have a ton of RBI opportunities.
How is he available? I don't understand this. I didn't even realize. He's only owned in 13% of leagues. I mean, I get it if you don't want to draft him with the expectation that he's going to play a full season, but when he's healthy, you own him and you play him every day. I don't understand.
Right, and the 35 home runs from 2017 is fluky. That's not realistic. But there's no reason why, you know, for the rest of the season, he can't hit 20 home runs and drive in 80, 90 runs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with that. A couple other names I have written down here. Wilmer Flores batting in the middle of the lineup for Arizona. He hasn't really got kick in yet, but he's probably going to hit 15, 20 homers, bat around 270. It's just a solid bat. Same with Brandon Belt. Batting average hasn't really been there. He's got some injury issues that he always has to deal with. But when he's on the field, same as Ryan Zimmerman, he produces. And the last name that I really wanted to highlight, and I'm sure you were going there too, Mick, everybody is raving about Clint Frazier. He's playing almost every day. He's already got three homers, another former top prospect. He's going to be playing in New York. Do you think that he's the top pickup of everyone that we've mentioned so far?
If he's not, he's close, especially after the weekend he had. You know, we've always seen that he has potential for it, and he's been, you know, in trade rumors for seemingly forever, but he's still a young guy with a ton of potential. It's a matter of him with staying healthy, number one, and number two, getting into a situation as he is now where there are so many injuries on the Yankees that he's found his way into some playing time. And the only thing I question with him is once some of these guys return, you know, once Stanton comes back and once Hicks comes back, what Frazier's role is going to be. But if you're looking for somebody for the next, you know, 3 or 4 weeks and hopefully catch some lightning in a bottle, he's a great pickup.
I agree. And if you've got a fab budget, he's going to cost you probably 40, 50 fab. I would not do that. If you can pick him up with spending 15 to 20%, I think that's good because I agree. I think that we can't be guaranteed he's going to play more than 3 or 4 weeks. If he does, yeah, he'd be worth the 40, 50. But I'm not so sure that that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's the only problem with him is the long-term future is a little bit murky.
Anybody else that you like in this range here, Mick?
There are a couple of outfielders. They're not the sexy type, and they're very similar players. But I look at Kevin Pillar, who was just traded to San Francisco, and as well as Kiermaier on Tampa Bay. These are guys who, kind of like Polanco, can do a little bit of everything. They can steal you 10 or 15 bases, hit 10 or 15 home runs. I prefer Kiermaier, although it looks like he's more of in a platoon situation at the moment. But if you're just looking for, you know, a fourth or fifth outfielder who just can get you a little bit of production in each category, these are a couple of guys that I like.
I'm just going to name a few other guys that I think are worth keeping an eye on. Tyler O'Neill, again, I've mentioned him every show for the past 4 or 5. Dexter Fowler's horrible. Marcell Ozuna's got the shoulder issue. We'll see what happens with that. He crushed the ball the other night, so maybe he's actually okay. But if O'Neill gets in the lineup, he's going to be an even bigger pickup than Clint Frazier. So you can add him now if you've got a deeper bench. And the other guy that I want to mention is Christian Stewart. I'm not rushing out to pick him up. In deeper leagues, he should be owned. But this is somebody who's bad in the middle of the Tigers lineup. Probably going to hit 20 homers. Batting average won't be great. He's not off to a good start, but definitely someone worth monitoring.
Definitely. Yeah, there's so many guys, you know, and that's the thing, too, is you're looking for these lineup slots. You know, even somebody like a Dwight Smith, who, you know, doesn't have the greatest skills per se, but somebody who's going to bat second in a lineup every day has some value. And there are a ton of guys like that on the waiver wire that you can pick up.
Oh, man, I just saw a stat on Twitter as you were talking about that from MLB Random Stats. It's one of my favorite Twitter follows. This one is so good. Daily reminder that Chris Davis has as many seasons with 50 plus homers as Barry Bonds and Hank Aaron combined.
Wow.
I never knew that. I mean, I mean, Hank Aaron didn't really hit, you know, have huge seasons or whatever. He was just durable. But man, that's incredible.
That's incredible. And to think of how far he's fallen and how quickly, and they still have about 3 years left on that contract. What a nightmare that is.
What's the over under on when this streak ends, this hitless streak? Like over 50? I think he's at 44 right now if you continue from last season.
Then, yeah, I think we're a pretty good shot at going over 50.
It's amazing. I don't understand why they don't just bench the guy.
I think it's a case of just, you know, the investment. It's sunken cost at this point. They might as well just cut their losses. But
sure, and they're going to lose 110 games anyway. Maybe 105, okay? I'm sorry, Orioles fans. I'm not trying to pick on you. But your team really is that bad. Just embrace it. Just embrace that you guys are punting and you're going to get the number one pick and maybe you'll get the next Chris Bryant kind of guy.
Yeah, and play the young guys and get a little bit of excitement going.
That's right. All right, we're going to get to pitchers in just a second, but first I want to talk to you about another one of the sponsors of today's show, TickPick. So I use TickPick to go to opening weekend with the Cardinals, and it was great. It was such a good experience with TickPick because when I was checking out, I was like, okay, so I'm spending this much money on the tickets, and now here comes the fees. Wait a second, there are no fees. If you hate paying too much for tickets, you need to check out TickPick. TickPick is easily the fastest, cheapest, and easiest app to use for purchasing tickets to all your favorite events, whether it's sports, concerts, theater, whatever it is, you name it. There's no fees and all tickets are 100% authentic. Just think StubHub without the fees. TickPick empowers customers to score the best tickets on any budget. You'll get the same tickets from the same seller, but absolutely zero fees. You'll end up saving 10 to 15% as a result on every ticket order. And check this out. TickPick is giving all our listeners an amazing offer of $15 off an order of $99 or more. All you have to do is enter the promo code FPROS15, all one word, at checkout. Remember, that's TickPick, and use the promo code FPROS15 at checkout to save $15 off an order of $99 or more. Your price, your seat, no hidden fees. TickPick is where smart fans buy tickets. All right, on to the pitchers. So Mick, we'll let you start us off in this 40 to 60% range. Who do you like?
Well, I have to be honest. There's a couple of guys that I almost feel like they're cheating to go this route, but I'm going to go with Joe Musgrove first and foremost.
You're not going to get any argument from me here. Absolutely.
I have no idea how he's only owned in 57% of leagues, but his pitch metrics are off the charts, and the only question with him has been health. He had an enormous breakout potential last season. He started off hot and on that trajectory this season. Shut out Cincinnati over seven innings the other day. And he's somebody who I tried to target wherever possible towards the middle round of drafts. And I'm all in on Joe Musgrove.
All right. My guy is Pedro Strop. And first of all, I agree on Joe Musgrove. If he's there, you get him over Clint Frazier. If he's there, you get him over any of the guys that we've mentioned. But somebody that I don't understand why he's 43% owned. Guys, Pedro Strop is the closer of the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs are doing bad right now, but they're the best team in the National League Central. Maybe the Brewers. Some would say the Cardinals. I don't think so, even though I'm a Cardinals fan. I think it's the Cubs. And they've got a closer, and he's their surefire closer, and he is saving every save opportunity that he gets. Pedro Strop is available in 57% of leagues, folks.
Absolutely. There are a few closers actually on this list. So I had Strop written down, and, you know, honestly, I'm looking at his crosstown team as well, Alex Colome on the White Sox. He's owned in 56% of leagues. He's another guy who I think is the closer. I'd rather have Strop for the record. But Colome is a guy who did have 47 saves a couple of seasons ago. It's not as if he can't get the job done. So he's somebody I like, and I shudder to mention this name, but I do feel like I need to mention that Greg Holland falls in this range as well. I do not trust Holland over any of the other options we have discussed, but if you are looking for saves and you are desperate, he's somebody who's gotten off to a decent start, but I'd much rather have Strope and Colome for sure.
Yeah, he's not bad at all. And in fact, I would rather have Colome than Strope just because I don't know if Strope's going to hang on to the closer job. I think Colome is a good bet to get 25 saves this year.
Absolutely. I do like both of the Chicago closers, but yeah, I think I agree with you that Colome probably has a longer leash, as far as Morrow returning and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And by the way, I mentioned Musgrove over Clint Frazier, Matthew Boyd over all of them. I am 100% convinced that this breakout is real. You do not get 25 whiffs in a game, not strikeouts. Okay. He had 25 swing and misses, which is an elite number. And I'm not so sure that, obviously, that's not going to continue. He's not Jacob deGrom or anything like that. But I really do think that he is breaking out. I do think he's going to strike at 190, 200 batters this year with solid ratios. And, you know, plays in the AL Central. There are some bad lineups in there. So ratios are going to be good. He's going to get some wins. I think Matt Boyd is that type of pitcher you want, like Mike Clevinger, who is going to help you win a league by being a great number three starting pitcher.
For sure. I had him written down as well. The thing I like about Boyd is he had an elite slider last season, and it looks like he is throwing that pitch more so far in the early going. And through two starts, I mean, again, small sample sizes, as we've discussed, but I think his slider whiff rate is over 31%, which is just ridiculous. So the more he throws that pitch, the better as far as I'm concerned.
There's quite a few guys in this range I'd love to have. Tyler Skaggs is one of them. Brad Peacock is available. Adelin Betances, if you need another relief pitcher, he's going to be back pretty soon. I'd rather have him than Andrew Miller, who's owned in 64% of leagues now. And then Carlos Rodon. Carlos Rodon is someone who's going to have a quality whip. Again, he's in the AL Central, another former top prospect, and he hasn't looked so bad lately. He's got a 1.59 ERA through two starts, 15 Ks. We've always been waiting for his breakout. A lot of times with these pitchers, it doesn't happen until their late 20s, even early 30s. I think Rodon could do it this year if he can finally stay healthy.
Rodon is somebody I do like, but right now he is struggling in his start against Tampa Bay. But overall, I do like the skills that he possesses. And as you mentioned, he is in the AL Central, which doesn't hurt because there are some bad offenses there.
Anyone else from this range before we move on to the next one?
A couple players I like. I do like Eflin on Philadelphia. He's another guy who's started off pretty well. And I do think that similar to Boyd, obviously, I like Matt Boyd way better. But Eflin is another guy who seems to have increased use of his slider. And I'm not sure if that was a result of the fact that he lost some velocity on his fastball or if they're just trying to tweak some of his pitch mix. But his slider has been pretty effective this season, has a 28% whiff rate.
He's going to get wins there for sure.
He absolutely is. And another guy I'm looking at, again, not fully convinced this is legitimate breakout, but Matt Shoemaker so far has got off to a very good start. I'm very curious to see how he fares against Boston this week because the two games he has pitched have been against less than stellar lineups. I'm very curious to see how he fares against a real major league lineup this week.
I can't believe I passed him over. He's right up there with Matt Boyd for me. In fact, I'd maybe rather have him than Joe Musgrove. I'd put those two neck and neck.
Interesting. See, I think I like Musgrove and Boyd better, but Shoemaker's definitely interesting for sure.
All right, on to that 20 to 40% range, and I'll let you go first here.
Well, I do have to mention Brazier, who we spoke about a little bit earlier. Definitely in the mix for saves in Boston and appears to be the favorite at the moment. We're looking at people like Strope and Holland, who are owned in more leagues than Brazier. I think at this point that has to change. Brazier is somebody I'm definitely looking for saves from, and you know the wins are going to come in Boston. They've gotten off to a slow start, but obviously we're talking about a top-notch team. So anybody who's in the mix for saves there is somebody that's on my radar.
In the hitters range, 20 to 40%, there were a lot of guys that I loved. In this range, that's not really the case so much. I'd be fine. Obviously, Ryan Brazier's a great pickup. We mentioned him. I'd be fine picking up guys like the Miami pitchers, Trevor Richards, Sandy Alcantara, maybe Yanni Chirinos. Taylor Rogers isn't saving a bunch of games for Minnesota. He'll get a handful, and he's also got great ratios. He's like a Dallin Betances light. But besides that, there's nothing that I really love.
Well, there's a couple of things that I found interesting. I did write down Yanni Chirinos. You know, I thought that he and Yarborough were going to be kind of the swing guys in Tampa, but it looks like Chirinos is kind of carving himself out a role as a starter. And he's looked the part so far. I mean, again, only two starts, but he's somebody that I kind of keep my eye on. I don't know if I'd go all in at the moment, but he's definitely somebody I'm interested in. Again, as we talked about before, with some players that you're looking for saves, Blake Parker in Minnesota and Anthony Swarzak in Seattle are a couple of guys who, if you want to speculate, it looks like right now those guys are the favorites for saves. Hard to say for sure how long that's going to last in either scenario. But definitely a couple players that I think are worth short-term pickups, at least.
Yeah, and Michael Givens might get a few in Baltimore. He hasn't been very good lately. Sir Anthony Dominguez, with David Robertson struggling, even without Robertson struggling, I think Dominguez is the superior relief pitcher at this point. He was the best last year, and he's only getting better. This guy is really, really good. I think he's Dallin Betances with the chance to steal the saves job. And I take back what I said earlier about this range because there is one player who I like more than Matt Boyd. He's my top pickup of the week. It's Freddy Peralta. In fact, if you were listening to this podcast, you probably own him because I begged you all to draft him. He was awesome in his last start. I think he's going to be awesome moving forward. He is the man.
I know. People kind of get nervous when they think of him more of like a two-pitch pitcher, but his pitches are awesome. So yeah, I have no reservations about Peralta at all at this point.
Do you think that he could be a true ace, or is he more along the lines of like a number two or number three?
I'd say probably more along the lines of a two or a three, but I mean, on that team, they're going to win games regardless. They have a solid lineup and obviously a solid bullpen, or at least the back end of the bullpen at this moment. But yeah, he should rack up plenty of wins and plenty of strikeouts. So I don't know if I'd go as far as to call him a true ace, but he's definitely going to give you some fantastic starts as he did the other day.
Yeah. And if you guys have been listening to the show, please forgive me. I'm going to share this stat again, but there's a lot of new people listening. So I'm just going to say this again. Freddy Peralta was only of only four pitchers to be in his top 10 in Ks per 9 and top 5 in batting average against, and the others were Blake Snell, Chris Sale, and Max Scherzer. Granted, it was a smaller sample size with Freddy Peralta, but you can't teach dominance. That's who he is. Yeah, he's got some command concerns and everything like that, but this guy is really good. He's got the best fastball in all baseball.
That's an interesting stat. I did not know that.
All right, before we get on to the bottom 20 percentile, do you have any other pitchers you want to share?
I think that's all in the 20 to 40 range. I did write down Steven Matz. He's somebody who has kind of always had the potential and has gotten off to a nice start. So if you're looking, again, not more of a dominant pitcher, but somebody who can be a nice 3-4 in your rotation, I think Steven Matz is somebody to monitor.
It's ugly down here in the under 20% range, and I agree with Matz. There is one player that I'm pretty fond of, however. He's 4% owned, and it's probably going to make some of you sick to your stomach to hear it, but Drew Pomeranz, like, why would I add that guy? I've seen this before. He's not very good, right? Well, think about this. After struggling in Coors Field, you know, he's been in some other ballparks as well. When he pitched in pitcher's parks for the A's and the Padres, he posted a 2.84 ERA with a 1.12 whip over 2.5 seasons. Now he's in San Francisco. Yeah, he's not going to win a bunch of games, but listen to this. His fastball velocity is up 2.7 miles per hour this year. That's the best in baseball. I think that he is going to be a sneaky one that helps people win leagues. I like Drew Pomeranz a lot right now.
There's certainly worse guys you can take. that's an interesting number about the velocity. He has shown potential. I mean, we saw what he did a couple of years ago. So, yeah, in a pitcher's park, the wins are a concern. But I do think he's going to put up solid peripherals. So that's an interesting take.
He was dreadful last year, 6.08 ERA, 1.77 whip. So I would understand if you guys want to ignore me on this one, but I'm telling you, I'm fond of what I see so far. All right, who do you like in this range?
Well, I mentioned it again in the article that came out last week. I mentioned Michael Pineda. He's coming back from, he missed all of 2018, and he's going to slowly build up his stamina. But we've seen in the past what he can do. Does have a tendency to get up the big fly, but does a very good job of controlling walks and hits. And, you know, he picked up the win on Saturday against Philly. He's got a couple of good starts upcoming. He's got Detroit this week and Toronto next week. And we've seen both of those offenses struggle mightily. Pineda's a guy who he's not going to throw 7-8 innings quite yet. You know, he's still building his way back up to form, but somebody I really like.
All right, one other name that I want to mix in here is Caleb Smith, another one of the Marlins pitchers. We've talked about him quite a bit. Tons of K upside. In fact, I might like him more than the names mentioned in the group above. And then Josh James for the Houston Astros. He's not in the rotation now. I think he will be again eventually. And until he is, he's dominating in the bullpen, so you can pick up, 60 Ks in 45 innings or something like that with sparkling ratios.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing not to like about Josh James. And, there is a chance, you mentioned him going to the rotation at some point. There's also a chance he can end up closing at some point. I mean, we've seen Osuna's been pretty good so far, but we know he's had some trouble off the field and that sort of thing. So Josh James, he's the kind of player who right now, he's going to be solid for ratios and that sort of thing and strikeouts, but he could make some even better value down the road, either as a reliever or as a starter. He's somebody I really like. Another player that's kind of in the same vein, although I wouldn't say he's quite as dominant as Josh James. I mentioned him before, is Diego Castillo in Tampa Bay. He's been in the mix for saves as well. He's another weapon out of that bullpen along with Alvarado. So those are a couple of guys that are going to be, solid for strikeouts and solid for ratios and also have potential to get some wins and saves down the road.
Those guys are both amazing, aren't they? That back end of the Rays bullpen is so good.
That's so filthy, I know.
Anybody else you like in this range, or you want to move on over to the listener mailbag?
Well, I do want to mention, we're always on the hunt for saves, and if you want to talk about some less than sexy options, but the guys in Kansas City right now, Ian Kennedy and Willie Peralta, look to be splitting that job. I think Kennedy's owned in 6% of leagues and Peralta's owned in 4%, so they're widely available. Again, I wouldn't go rushing out to grab one of these guys, but if you're in a deeper league and kind of desperate for saves, that's a situation worth paying attention to.
Yeah, and that's a good transition to the next question because, if you have to own those guys, you are looking for saves, right? Blake from Minnesota, and if you want to send in questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. So Blake from Minnesota says, I want the next Kirby Yates. Who's the best closer stash right now? It's probably some of the guys we've mentioned. You said Josh James. I said Sir Anthony Dominguez. Is there anybody else on your radar, Mick?
Well, yeah, I love Dominguez. I drafted him in a couple of leagues, and I'm kind of hoping that pays off in the near future. Castillo again on Tampa Bay is somebody I just mentioned who I really like a lot. And you mentioned Dellin Betances earlier. We've seen Chapman struggle a little bit and lose some velocity.
His velo is way down. I'm concerned he's injured.
I don't know for sure what his situation is, and I don't even know for sure that Betances would be the next man up. It could be Britton. But that is definitely a situation that I'm paying attention to.
I think it might be Ottavino as well. If you just got so many guys, it could be Chad Green, right? If Chad Green was a closer, he would be one of the top five guys in baseball, but he's like the fifth best relief pitcher on the Yankees, so.
Absolutely. Another guy who could, potentially be in the mix. I mentioned Dominguez. Hector Neris had a save yesterday, and he actually has looked pretty good. He's probably looked better than Dominguez or Robertson in the early going. I'm not sure how long that's going to hold, but I think Neris is legit.
We've seen him be amazing before, right? We've seen him rack up 90 plus strikeouts, I believe. Somebody else like that, Matt Albers, I think he has a chance at the closer job in Milwaukee. And granted, Josh Hader is holding down the fort right now. He's been amazing, but I don't think they want him in this role. So I think it's going to end up being Albers or more likely Jeremy Jeffress, who's my favorite closer stash. I think he's coming off the DL. He's going to, get a couple innings and then they'll put him in as the closer. He was excellent last season. 1.29 ERA, 0.99 whip, 89 Ks in 75 innings. I think he's going to be the closer for the rest of the season and he's going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
All right, next question is from Kevin in Vermont. He says, what do we do with these guys, who are on the DL long term? Like, do we cut Miguel Andujar? Do we cut Justin Upton, Scooter Jeanette?
It's such a hard question. A lot of it, it depends on the variables involved, how many IL spots you have or how long your bench is. In a lot of these cases, it's hard to say. I'd be more inclined to cut bait if you have shorter benches for some of these players. Andujar supposedly is going to get reevaluated in another week or two, but that makes me very nervous, the whole torn labrum thing. I just don't.
I mean, that ends people's careers pretty often. I'm not saying he's going to be done for because he's a hitter, but it's a bad injury.
Absolutely. And I just don't see him coming back from that. As far as Upton and Jeanette, sort of similar. We know they're coming back in another 6 to 8 weeks. With Upton, it's sort of a situation like Sano. I think Upton is, better than Sano and has a higher floor than Sano. But again, you're looking at a player who is not going to give you a ton of average. Probably looking at like a 250, 260 range. He'll probably hit 20 home runs from the time he comes back, but he's not going to steal bases, especially with the foot injury. So it depends on your other options, is the easy answer for me to give. But I'd be a little hesitant to keep guys for that length of time on my bench.
If you have an IL spot, keep them. I think all these guys are worth it. We'll see with Andujar what happens. But if you've got a bench of three players, that's not very deep. I would keep Upton and Jeanette in a points league. I would probably not because you need all those points. Like they pile up. If you're in a roto league or especially head to head, I think you keep all three for sure. If you've got no bench, I think you've got to cut them. You can't go that long without somebody.
Definitely. Yeah, that's too long to have an empty spot on your roster, I think.
All right, next question's from Tyler on Twitter. And if you want to send questions in, it's at BobbyFantasyPro. And by the way, you can follow Mick at TheMick23. And this one from Tyler, he wants to know, when I'm building a DFS lineup, for those of you who don't know, that means daily fantasy sports. So like FanDuel, DraftKings, stuff like that. What's the difference between a cash game and tournament strategy? Mick, do you play DFS?
Not very well,
No.
is the short answer. I dabble in it from time to time. I think as far as DFS strategy, I think the difference between a cash game for me and a tournament, well, I think either way, I think first and foremost, what you need to focus on is pitching matchups. I think that's going to get you your best return on investment, regardless of the format you play. But with cash games, I look for more players that are hitting at the top of the lineup, might get a knock or two and get a run, maybe steal a base.
Good call.
You're basically looking for players who are going to kind of accumulate a little bit of volume. I think in tournaments, it's more of the home run threats because obviously home runs get you a massive amount of points, from the home runs themselves, and then obviously the runs and RBIs that are created as a result. So players like, Joey Gallo, I wouldn't always be fond of rostering in a cash game, but in a tournament, give me somebody like that all day who can go 2 for 5 and hit 2 home runs and get you 25 points.
I don't actually mind owning someone like Gallo in a cash game that much if I'm owning like 5 guys like Gallo, because over the course of a season, like, you're going to get one or two of those guys hits a home run every day, and maybe you'll get one and that won't be enough, so you'll lose. But over the course of a season, it'll be two more often than not. So I don't mind, you know, having those more volatile players in my cash game lineup, but I can't do it at pitcher. In cash games, I am always putting the safest play in at pitcher, and that guy's usually 10,000 or more. So I'm always looking for those matchups of guys who just mash lefties. For instance, I just came out with a tweet just the other day where I said, you know, Jock Peterson, when he goes up against righties, is actually better than, you know, guys like Manny Machado and Javier Baez. He's really, really good, and he's usually like $2,300, $2,400. It's the same thing with lefties. You've got guys out there like Jose Martinez who just destroy lefties, and they're like $2,400. So when you get them against a lefty, it's essentially like you're putting Alex Bregman into your lineup. So take advantage of that. But yeah, spend money in cash games on pitchers. For GPP, that means the tournament contest with the bigger prizes. You need to really, you know, hit a home run per se. What I like to do is I like to double stack. So I find two teams that I think can go off, and a lot of times it's an, you know, a contrarian team that a lot of people aren't going to stack. So I'll stack like the Astros against a lefty, always a great stack. And then I'll stack like the Marlins or something, because every once in a while the Marlins do score 12 runs, and if that happens and you're the only one who has it with an Astro stack, you've got a chance to win some big old money. So I like to do double stacks. That's at least three players from two different lineups. Then I'll plug in a Joey Gallo or something like that, punt in position, fill in whatever money I have left over. Hope that helps. All right, next one's from Alex on Twitter, and he wants to know how much is too much to trade for Clayton Kershaw. He says the owner in his league is willing to sell him, and he feels a little bit nervous about it, but this could be an opportunity to win his league, right?
Definitely. I can understand the skepticism when it comes to Kershaw, but, you know, for everything we've seen the last few weeks has been positive. You know, he's made a rehab start. He's in line to enter the rotation in the next week or so. You know, I think now's the time to jump, because if he comes back and pitches a couple of dominant performances, even if it's in a shorter, you know, length of start, 5-6 innings, let's say, the window is going to be closed. So if you want to get Kershaw, I think now's the time to do it. And like you said, it's a hit or miss proposition, but it's going to give you the chance to win your league. Whereas if you kind of sit and wait, you're not going to get a pitcher of that ilk on the waiver wire. So yeah. I definitely think that's a good idea to go after him at this point.
You know, in 2011 to 2014, obviously he was the greatest pitcher in baseball, and it wasn't even close. Cy Young 1, Cy Young 2, Cy Young 1, Cy Young 1, and he won the MVP, right? His ERA in that time was below 2. He was amazing. He was striking out 250 guys every single year. Well, since then, he hasn't been as good, but listen to this. Over the last 4 years, his ERA is still 2.22. He struck out 830 guys in 718 innings. His whip is 0.90. That's like an elite closer. This is somebody who's finished Cy Young 3, Cy Young 5, Cy Young 2. And then last year, he only pitched 161 innings, but he averages 180 in this time. And we're getting someone who's a top 5 pitcher in baseball maybe when he comes back. Now, let's see. He's on the other side of his 30, so maybe he's, you know, not going to pitch quite as well, but I can almost guarantee you his ERA is going to be under 3 and his whip is going to be under 1.1.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, you mentioned last season. I don't think there's any reason why we can't expect similar numbers. You know, you mentioned 161 innings. That's probably what he's going to be this season in that range. And, you know, he had a 2.73 ERA last season, struck out over 150 batters. So, yeah, I think he's still top-notch. Is he the level he was 5 years ago? Probably not, but he's still so much better than 90% of the pitchers you're going to see out there.
Yep, I like it. All right, Mick, this next one's from Shane on Twitter. He wants to know if there's another stud minor leaguer expected to get the call soon. Obviously not Vlad Guerrero or Eloy Jimenez, but he wants someone who's going to come up and dominate like Pete Alonso that no one really had on their radar.
That is a tough question. I mean, the thing with Alonso, obviously he's got off to a blistering start, but so I think you need to temper your expectations a little bit if that's the barometer. You know, I don't think everybody's going to hit 3 home runs and have 11 RBIs in their first 9 games. So that might be pushing a little bit. But obviously there are some players that are on the radar. You know, Kyle Tucker in Houston, he's an elite prospect, as well as Nick Senzel in Cincinnati. You know, you mentioned Vlad, obviously, and Vlad is rostered in pretty much every league, and perhaps Tucker and Senzel are as well. But those are guys that are going to hit from day one as soon as they come up. And, you know, they might not have the raw power that Alonso has, but I think you're looking at guys that are going to give you multi-category production.
Yeah, Tucker is definitely going to steal some bases. So is Senzel. I think Senzel bats 290 from the get-go. He's going to play a bunch of positions. Those are good names. I think the next one to come up is going to be Nate Lowe for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's a first baseman, so not as exciting. But I think Alonso, but instead of the elite power, you trade that elite power for mediocre power and elite batting average. He batted 330 last year in the minor leagues with 27 homers, 32 doubles, 102 RBIs. In just 482 at bats. So, this is somebody that I think can come up and bat 280, 285 right away, kind of like Eloy Jimenez with not quite as much power.
Yeah, he's definitely someone who's going to be interesting because right now, we talked about Yandy Diaz earlier, and the Rays are kind of mixing and matching, going with Choi at first base. And Choi's gotten off to a hot start, but yeah, Lowe is somebody who I really like a lot as well.
And I don't know how you can hold him down when you've got Garcia DHing for you. And, Kevin Kiermaier's eventually going to get hurt. So maybe Garcia moves to the outfield, Austin Meadows moves to center, and Garcia moves to right or something. And they put Lowe at first base or DH.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. They have a lot of moving pieces and interchangeable parts. That's definitely an exciting team to watch.
All right, last question here, and this is a great way to round it out. In fact, I think we talked about this 2 years ago. Maybe somebody remembered the question and sent it in, but there was a big brawl yesterday. Yasiel Puig tried to take on the entire Pittsburgh Pirates, and he wants to know, Mark from Pennsylvania, if you had to assemble a team of three MLB players for a brawl, who would you pick? So we're going to do a draft here to end the show.
Wow. All right. Are you getting the first pick or are you giving me the first pick?
You get first pick, I'll take second and third, you get fourth and fifth, and then I'll finish us off with sixth.
All right. Well, I will not mention Puig since he was involved in the altercation yesterday. So I'm going to go with Tyler O'Neill.
Oh man, what a great pick. I didn't have him on my list, but man, I think you won.
You mentioned him earlier. I mean, the dude is just jacked. He's just a beast. His father was a pro bodybuilder. I mean, he's just massive. And yeah, I would want him in my foxhole for sure.
I'm going to go with somebody who was formerly Tyler O'Neill's teammate. And we'll just say he taught him everything because Tommy Pham is a beast. Have you seen this guy? He is absolutely jacked. And Tyler O'Neill, I think he's 5'10". Tommy Pham's 6'1". He's got a big old wingspan too.
Yeah, I like Tommy Pham a lot. Yeah, he looks like a mean dude. He could be a mean dude.
Yeah, he's fast. He's got a good frame as well. He's a pretty fierce guy. And I'm gonna go with someone else, someone who's just an incredible athlete all around. Another big dude. I don't think people realize just how big he is because he's so agile. You watch him in the field, and he's just majestic out there. But Lorenzo Cain could beat some dudes up.
Yeah, he definitely can. Yeah, I like him a lot.
All right, you've got picks 4 and 5 here.
One person I was going to say is Kane's teammate, Eric Timms. We've seen him bash some baseballs, and I'm sure he can bash a couple of heads if he is given him the opportunity. It's funny because I was watching a clip of him the other day, and yeah, he's another guy who's just ripped, and I really think he'd cause some damage.
I've got one more name at the top of my list that I really want, and then I think there's a pretty big drop off, but you've got one more pick, so don't take my guy.
I don't think I'm going to pick your guy. I could be wrong. I think I'm going a little bit off the radar here, but I'm going to take Ken Giles.
Ooh.
Yeah, if you're in a brawl, I think you need a little bit of that Puig craziness, that little bit of X Factor mentality. And I think Giles has that.
He's a psycho, yeah.
Yeah, he punches himself in the face, and he's somebody who can get a little riled up, and I think he might be the one who causes the fight and starts the fight, but I think he can back it up. I think he'll jump right in there with both feet.
All right, I'm making my final pick here. And frankly, I thought about taking him 1-1 just because I thought that he would probably be a guy that you had on your list because we've seen it before. He landed the best punch in MLB history brawls. It's Rougned Odor. He's not the biggest guy, but we've seen him do it before, not only in the major leagues, but back in the minor leagues. He took on like four people in the same fight. He's a beast.
Yeah, he's an animal, man. I love
Okay, so
that guy.
here's the rosters. You can let us know who won on Twitter at TheMick23 and at Bobby Fantasy Pro. I've got Tommy Pham, Lorenzo Cain, and Rougned Odor. Mick, who do you have?
I have Tyler O'Neill, Eric Timms, and Ken Giles.
Oh man, those are some big boys. That's gonna be tough to beat. Man, I thought about picking Mike Trout too because he could be the man, but I don't think he would probably fight.
I know, it's funny. It's not always about size. That's why I kind of like your picks, because it's not always about size. Yeah, you can go with, like, you know, Trout and Judge and Stanton and those guys, but you got to have a little ferocity in there.
Yeah. Like Harper's huge. I thought about picking Bryce Harper, but he had his chance, right? And he threw the helmet the wrong direction on purpose.
Right.
You got to have someone who doesn't have that composure who's just going to go all out. Like Aaron Judge, he's huge. He would be awesome if he wanted to be, but he doesn't want to be. So he's got that big old smile. All right, Mick, that's all for today's show. That was a lot of fun. Thank you for taking the time to come on.
Thanks for having me, Bobby. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And thanks to the sponsors of today's show, TickPick, where you can get $15 off an order of $99 or more by going to TickPick and entering the promo code FPROS15, all one word, at checkout. And thanks also to pristineauction.com. That's PRISTINE. Check out all the values they have for you. Everything's guaranteed authentic from only the most trusted sources. And don't forget to check out our MVP premium package, where you can get the autopilot feature and you can use my playbook on up to 10 teams. That multi-league assistant is just a thing of beauty. I absolutely love it. All right, from Mick Chilella, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening and enjoy your baseball.